You're listening to Met Radio 1280 AM CJTM in Toronto. This is Mia Johnson with the Local Journalism Initiative.
I heard from multiple youth who shared stories of sleeping in a cemetery in the greater, like in the GTA, sleeping in a cemetery, okay? No young person should be sleeping in a cemetery because that's where they feel safest. So if that's the point that we're at, then clearly something needs to change within the system.
Okay, so we're gonna break this whole planet. 1 year, huh? 2026, 31 units of daycare.
Construction began this week for 31 new transitional housing units at the Wagner Green YMCA site. That's where Mayor Olivia Chow stands, shovel in hand, among other city officials, members of parliament, and community leaders.
We are breaking ground on this site. 7 Vanallery Street is creating 31 units of affordable housing for queer kids.
Okay, are we ready?
Just one shot of the soil.
I'll just do a 3, 2, 1. Come over a bit.
1, 2, 3.
Throw.
4. All
right. They are building rent-geared income housing. This means no tenant will pay more than 30% of their income or shelter allowance of social assistance in rent. The city is partnering with the YMCA and the federal government to make this project happen. Mayor Olivia Chow says each unit in the 6-story building will include a private studio with a kitchenette and a bathroom.
Unless you are earning a huge amount of money, it's really hard to survive the city. Even if you have a decent job, it's $30,000 or $40,000 a year, you still might not be able to afford rent.
Right now, there are over 1,000 affordable homes completed or underway. This is part of the City of Toronto and Toronto Community Housing Rapid Rehousing Initiative, a program identifying vacancies in the city, finding empty lots that could be made to accommodate for people experiencing chronic homelessness.
Canada, unlike the United States, recognize people have different sexual orientations and they have specific needs. But that transition, and when they're young, that's when they're most vulnerable.
Toronto Deputy Mayor Ozma Malik spoke to us on the lot. She says the site caters to an especially vulnerable group in the city right now. Queer youth.
That this project targets a specific group in our city that has a higher proportion of homelessness or is susceptible to homelessness at a higher degree, and that is really important. We are supporting a population of young people, 2SLGBTQI+ young people who we know are more vulnerable in the way that the systems are set up.
Dr. Alex Abramovich is an expert on housing for 2SLGBTQ+ youth. We spoke with him to help us understand why this housing is so critical right now.
I would say that the system hasn't been constructed to really support all young people. It's very much built in a way to support a particular type of person. And if you don't fit into that box, you're going to have a much harder time fitting into the system or finding the support that you need.
Alex is no stranger to this issue. He's been working to address this disparity for the past 15 years.
I'm a senior scientist at the Institute for Mental Health Policy Research at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, also known as CAMH, and an associate professor at the Dalhousie School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. I hold a Canada Research Chair in 2SLGBTQ youth homelessness and mental health. And so this is an area that I've been studying for a long time. So I've been addressing the issue of 2SLGBTQ youth homelessness for the past 15 years. And, during this time, I've really had the privilege of working with some incredible young people. And, the overarching aim of my program of research is very much obviously focused in this area. I investigate health and social inequities that are experienced by queer and trans youth in particular, and really have a focus on understanding and improving their health and service needs. All of the work that I do really has an aim to create positive social impact and to create much needed change.
And Alex agrees with Toronto Deputy Mayor Malik how these groups are vulnerable in the way the systems are built. For instance, he says many of these young people experience multiple stigmas when accessing the shelter system or the housing system, like transphobia, homophobia, or racism.
You know, that really is what leads to this situation where queer and trans youth just end up avoiding services, and then they end up experiencing these high rates of hidden homelessness, you know, poor mental health outcomes, and they end up completely excluded and really neglected pretty much in every possible way.
The YMCA say unhoused youths often struggle to find employment to sustain themselves.
Number one, they don't have a fixed address. And I think that's that makes it very, very difficult to secure formal employment when you don't have an address to put down. And you don't have everything that comes with having it, you know, a safe sort of home environment. As well, you know, for many, for trans and gender diverse youth who perhaps, you know, maybe they're socially transitioning, maybe they're earlier on in their transition, and perhaps they their gender identity may not align with what they look like on their identification card, or the name that, you know, their name on their identification card, or even the sex marker on the ID card. And that also makes it very difficult to navigate not just employment, but healthcare services and any sort of service where you would have to share your identification makes it really, really complicated for youth to navigate services in that sort of way.
Right now, 26% of youth experiencing homelessness in Toronto identify as LGBTQ+. This is the most recent data collected on this. It's from the Street Needs Assessment in 2021. This is a study conducted by the City of Toronto. City staff say it's to give people a voice in identifying what supports and services will help them the most. New data will be heard in 2025, but Alex says this data is only the tip of the iceberg for what this population really looks like.
This is without a doubt an underestimate. And there's different reasons, you know, that I think it's really important to make that clear that this, you know, we say we found, yes, 26%, but there are limitations, of course, to this type of data collection. And one being that when that data was collected, it was during COVID, right? And so the experience was quite different. So it's important to keep that in mind. And also important to keep in mind that, you know, that 2S LGBTQ youth experience hidden homelessness. So they experience high rates of hidden homelessness also within Toronto, within the GTA, meaning that they're not accessing shelters and housing programs. And so they don't have an opportunity to complete these surveys because they're hidden. They're quite literally hidden, right? And so they're not accessing like mainstream services. So they're not included in this data. And another major reason is that 2S LGBTQ youth often report that they feel unsafe, right? So they feel unsafe on a daily basis, on the streets, within programs. And so because they are not just they feel unsafe, I mean, they are unsafe. And so they are forced to hide their identity because they're fearful, you know, of people finding out how they identify. So they don't self-identify on, even if they have an opportunity to complete these surveys, they often don't disclose their gender or sexual, you know, identity.
According to Alex's research in 2014, there were 9 emergency youth shelters in Toronto at that time.
An emergency shelter would provide support to someone who's really in a crisis situation. So many of the young people who I work with are experiencing homelessness. They've been kicked out due to family conflict, okay? Typically identity-based family conflict resulting from them coming out as 2S LGBTQ, okay? So that's really like the major contributing factor to youth homelessness, but the most frequently cited cause that queer and trans youth experience homelessness. So for a young person who, you know, just came out, they've just been kicked out or forced to leave, and they're really in a crisis situation. They have nowhere to go. So oftentimes they will turn to look for an emergency shelter because it's like, where can I sleep right now, tonight? I need a bed tonight. I don't have time to apply to a program.
2014 also saw 4 transitional housing programs supporting unhoused youth.
And so then, you know, when you think about like a transitional housing program, that's a longer process. You can't just show up at the door and be like, I need a bed tonight. You actually have to go through an application process, fill out a form, you have an interview.
The rent geared to income units under construction at the Wagner Green site are not the first time this idea has been implemented before. However, this is the largest building in capacity we've seen in Toronto so far.
It's hard to really keep up with which programs have opened as of right now. But I will say that, you know, I recently worked with Blue Door, which is a housing provider in York Region, where, and they had opened up the inclusion program a couple of years ago, which is also a supportive housing program where youth pay a portion of their rent. It's a much, much smaller program than the YMCA program. So they have capacity for about 4 to 5 youth. So it is, you know, significantly smaller, but very similar type of program.
The YMCA's taken on similar initiatives like this in the past. In 2016, the Sprott House became Toronto's first shelter for queer youth.
They opened up the first sort of transitional housing programs, being Sprott House.
But when it comes to accessing rent-geared income housing like this, Alex says the process can be much lengthier.
Well, many of these supportive housing programs, rent-geared income, that's a highly independent program. Not necessarily, may not necessarily meet the needs of someone who is experiencing crisis right then and there.
According to city data this month, shelters are operating at full capacity. Toronto Deputy Mayor Malik says hundreds of people are being turned away from shelters every night. So we asked Dr. Alex Abramovich if there are other places LGBTQ youth can go when they're in these crisis emergency situations.
You know, I wish I could say that there were. I honestly wish I could say to you that there are places that we know for sure are 2S LGBTQ, you know, inclusive and safe. But unfortunately, I can't say that to you because in a study that I recently conducted in the past few years, let's say like around COVID, when COVID was, you know, at the end of the pandemic, we were interviewing youth in the GTA, okay, 2S LGBTQ youth who were experiencing homelessness. And I heard from multiple youth who shared stories of sleeping in a cemetery in the greater, like in the GTA, because that was their safest option. Sleeping in a cemetery, okay? And, you know, I've been doing this work for a long time, for many years. And so, you know, I'm well aware of the housing crisis and just many of the difficulties that folks experience when they're trying to access housing and safety. But I have to say, you know, that was the first time where I heard youth report that they were sleeping in a cemetery because that is where they felt safest. And I think that, to me, you know, just really highlighted how serious the situation has become and just what a critical point we're at right now and why these types of programs that are opening, like the YMCA program, are just so, these are life-saving programs. Like literally, they save people's lives.
We did say it was ceremonial.
Lisa Heppner is the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for Women, Gender Equality, and Youth. She told reporters Tuesday the federal government will invest over $16 million to support the new build.
We know that in order to solve the housing crisis, we have to work together. It takes collaboration, it takes all levels of government, and it takes our community partners as well.
This funding will also go towards the 12-unit apartment building at St. Jude Community Homes, which is yet to start construction.
After a decade of neglect with no housing being built, the city of Toronto is back in the housing business.
The music for this episode was produced by Robert Johnston. This is Mia Johnson with the Local Journalism Initiative.